He gets in this image of himself, and then it's he cuts it down. You know, you get this big, you know, almost this, it's almost self-pitying tone, which just is countered again, like we were seeing all these, you know, minus one, plus one, plus one, minus one. This is kind of, you write something and then you erase it. You get this sort of sentimental response, and then you get this totally ironic, you know, about himself, self-irony. He thought, but then I was doing this. Brought in upon a platter, and this crazy, this rhyme. And then, I am no prophet. And a guy who's trying to talk, and just a few lines before was, shall I say, I am no prophet. And that's, oof. And then, but that's no great matter. What do you mean that's no great matter? You know, really, he's got, you know, he's got this, the sentiment and the irony, the hurt and the sort of laughing it off.
I see him being, I have seen my head brought in on a platter, you know. And I go back to him wriggling on the wall. And being pigeonholed, he's being served.
Yeah, served up.
That are in this highly cultivated, are so quick at pigeonholing. And he sees himself being served to them, just taking part.
I think that is the image. I mean, that you are, I think, to connect back to the formulated on that thing. Yeah.
I guess I kind of think that he is reliving a time in which he might have made a difference but can't anymore. I mean, there's just been too many cakes and ices, and he's been living too long on a diet that just won't allow it. Just won't allow the crisis to come to a head. And you know,
come to a head?
But no, it's like I've been through the wars.
Yeah.
You know, I've, and there was a time, I think, but you know, but that would have been right before my head was brought in on a platter, when I really would have pulled it like it was, and that's why I turned up against the wall. I think he's got his, you know, he just one excuse after another. He's, how should I begin?
Yeah.
And actually, you get pinned on the wall after you've begun.
Yeah.
You don't begin after they pin you. There's nothing for them to pin you to the wall for.
Yeah. This is anxiety breeds grief.
Yes. Yeah, right.
And
exactly.
He's breeding grief.
Exactly. So he works up into an unknown future and digs up some kind of excuse for him not being something now.
Yeah. And he asks, the overwhelming questions are not questions at all, really.
Yeah.
And this is what will, you know, we get. Here, you know, I am no prophet. That's somehow a rationalization. And here the opposite, that's no great matter. That's a rationalization.
Yeah.
Another rest. He's got both his bets covered. I'm not a prophet, and then it doesn't matter, is kind of buying out again. Yeah.
When you said that he couldn't embrace him, somebody who can't embrace something can probably assume the actual thing would be a short awesome.
I don't care.
I mean, it's like that kind of to see that these kinds of things get ignored, you know, but like what you were saying before, that he's both the critic not a creator, but he sees it, and then he's never the actor. He sees the act and sees the criticism of it, and he never sees himself. He can never do it.
Never make that connection.
And so that, I think, is why the image is so powerful. The men without chest kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, or the hollow man without.
Yeah, his other one. And he's got in the Hollow Men, he says, between the idea and the reality comes the shadow. You know, he's got this whole series of between the idea and the reality comes the shadow. Between the thought and the execution comes the shadow. You know, between everything comes the shadow, stopping everything from being completed, just stopping everything. And then the Hollow Men is just tremendous on that. Then he says, no profit, it's no great matter. I've seen the great moment of my greatness flicker. We don't know what moment that was. Is that another rationalization? I'm over the hill here now. And there was a time, instead of there will be time, there was a time, there was a time when I could have done this, but now I can't. And now I'm close enough to the footman, eternal footman, you know, death is there, and it's going to snicker, and there won't even be dignity there. And then he gets back, and in short, I was afraid. And he just comes out. That's a good...
You just start laying bare.
Clear
waking up
statement.
You're waking up.
And in short, I was afraid. Now, I asked you a question, where do the ands begin? And that whole series begins way, you know, at back on line 22. And, you know, and indeed there will be time, and, sort of neurotic, and, I never can get the whole statement out, and, stop, and, yeah, I'm going to revise my poems, and, you know, and so forth. He just, this incredible and, in short, I was afraid. Three words, sums up 80, you know, or 63 lines. And in short, I was afraid. I mean, there's that little kind of, you know, this little hard reality, three words of hard reality.
Speaking through.
Yeah, he goes right back to it then, doesn't he? I mean, and, yeah, he does. And, oh, and it would have, he's involved again, he brings up the arguments again. And would have been worthwhile, meaningful, after all, and we already said that that's kind of a nonsense sentence. It's after 10 o'clock.
Can we do this tomorrow?
No.
Can we continue now?
No.
I would like to finish it tonight because I want to get into it again. Thank you.
This is the third time you've gotten into it.
How much more?
Well, this is a good.
We got 40.
Why sacrifice those 40 lines? I mean, just to get through it, you know. Mm-hmm. Why don't we save it to save it?
Number aren't going to be gone.
Is there a Sunday book on
Let's tell you what. Let's do a fast flash over these next lines, the people that are going tomorrow, and then we will meet again tomorrow, too. Let's make a fast run over these lines for those leaving tomorrow, and then we'll come back. We'll meet again tomorrow. And I have some stuff to share with you, Dan, and we can talk through this last part some more too.
And since can I say one thing?
Yeah.
People are leaving over the weekend. And those of you who didn't get to that, maybe you mentioned this already, you can read the Charles Lynch thing 3 days ago. That's on tape. And you ought to get it, and it's really connected. I mean, you're supposed to be there, so do it for your sake.
I don't investigate,
but anyway, but listen, if you weren't there, listen to him, and if you're not going to be here tomorrow or Saturday, I'm sure Steve will make another tape. But it's a lot better to be here because Charles Williams is a kind of freaky fellow to pick up on if you haven't exposed yourself to him. Mm-hmm. Sort of like this. I mean,
you get
it's really exciting. I don't know if I'd feel excited if I was listening to the tape.
Yeah.
So it's a lot to ask of yourselves to get as much out of the tape, and so that's too bad, you know, to miss it. But if you're already planning, you have to do something. Don't forget to catch up on it before you.
That's right.
No, Charles Williams will be Saturday.
Okay. Well, let's go quickly through this. For those leaving, just to give a kind of a symmetry to the thing, or give them a whole thing to think about. But also, those leaving, read Wasteland, because we're going to pick up on Wasteland early next week, maybe Monday. It'll be coming out tomorrow. I hope that it maybe if I get down real early.
Well, I'm going to be running off things for Jay in the morning.
Yeah. It isn't, yeah. I think maybe we could get it out. The people are going when? 10?
Probably
10. 10? We might be able to get it out by 10. And would it have been worthwhile after all? Now, this is the next question he asked. Now, can you answer that question? No. Is it going to be worthwhile? You can't answer that question. Yet it's one we ask. A lot. But we can't answer it. And especially after all. And all, what is his all? Cups, marmalade, tea, among the porcelain, among some talk of you and me. Would it have been worthwhile to have bitten off the matter with a smile and to have squeezed the universe into a ball, to roll it to some overwhelming question? To say, I am Lazarus, come back from the dead, come back to tell you all, I shall tell you all. If one settling a pillow by her head should say, that is not what I meant at all, that's not it at all. She's sort of a rich brother.
Is that kind of him, you know, going back, like, shall I say, is he thinking, well, he'll do this, but no, he'll get this reaction?
There's no point, because I'll get this kind of reaction. Now, in the Lazarus story, Lazarus is not going to go back because they have the prophets, they have Moses, they haven't heard them, they won't understand me. See? And she's kind of a rich brother. She's had Moses and she's had the prophets and he isn't going to understand him if he comes back. One other thing there, it implies that he's dead. That his life is a death life, a breathing death. We are the breathing dead. If somehow Lazarus can come back from the dead like Dante came back from the dead, that no one would listen to him. You know, Dante comes back out and writes his thing and somehow he says, well, if I come back then no one will understand. If they haven't heard now, those who have ears to hear have already heard, those who don't have ears won't hear. But you've got these strange things to have bitten off the matter with a smile. To have squeezed the universe into a ball. This is the Marvel parallel. And I'll let you run that down yourself. But the squeezing the universe into a ball and rolling it you know, to some overwhelming question. It's strange to squeeze everything into a ball and then roll it toward a question, knocking the question somehow down like Skittles. Yet what is the question? Now he's going to start to say, I am this, I'm going to tell you all, but he doesn't have the words. He doesn't have the words, and even if he did have the words, he isn't going to take, because the people have the Moses and the prophets. Wouldn't know what he's talking about. In a sense, can't take the answer in universals. Now, there are two parts of the crisis. There seems to be a crisis in a personal relationship, some talk of you and me. There's a crisis in the meaning of everything, too. Real crisis that he's facing in the meaning of everything, and he can't come up with anything. And if your universe isn't significant, can you have a significant relationship if your universe isn't significant? Really? I mean, if your life has no significance, can your relationships have kind of significance? There's this fear that there isn't any significance, and that it is cups. What is all? Cups, marmalade, tea, porcelain, some talk. Then he goes with some more of this. Would it have been worthwhile after all? Would it have been worthwhile after the sunsets, the dooryards, the sprinkled streets, the novels, after the teacups, after the skirts that trail along the floor? This and so much more.
I hope so.
this Amos passage was really great. The famine of meaning. Famine, the word of God, starving. It's like the word of God is like rain, and it has not rained. And the whole land is experiencing a famine. You'll get this in the wasteland. There's just, it's people are hungering for the meaning, and nothing's happening. What we do have is a series of impressions, arbitrary images, novels, teacups, skirts, this and so much more. But as if a magic screen threw the nerves in patterns on a screen. But as if a magic lantern threw the nerves in patterns on a screen. Would it have been worthwhile if one settling a pillow or throwing off a shawl and turning toward the window should say, ho hum. That is not what I meant at all. If I throw my nerves, if like the light, the brain, light project my nerves up against the wall and you say ho hum, you know, I'm wrecked. If I speak my weakness and my pain and my wept and fasted and my discomfort and my so forth and you say huh, what's going to happen? But that image of as if a magic lantern threw the nerves in patterns on the screen, a powerful, powerful image. And then, dot, 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 dot. What happened? I remember I asked what happened between 110 and 111. And there's this real getting struck by an inadequacy. He's not a man. He's not a man with the words. He's not a man of action. No, I am not Prince Hamlet, nor was meant to be. Nice pun on that, to be or not to be. Mm-hmm. No, I am not Prince Hamlet, nor was meant to be. To live? To be or not to be? Yeah. For chance to dream, and then the beginning of Gerontian, you know, we're in the life, the dream, so forth. Nor was meant to be. And then, of course, the famous Hamlet, to be or not to be. That is the question. To be or not to be. That is the question. Now, click.
Overwhelming.
Now, is that the overwhelming question? Yeah.
In the Great Divorce, where even grass is too much for people who aren't part of them to walk on.
Yeah.
One real question in a life like this would be about grass, I think. But if grass is any real question that will go that you never circle that way. And I think it could come in a form as simple, and it comes maybe back to fear for the idea of the religious man who looks like he's doing the most normal things. I mean, he's no prophet either.
The drawing room is a big enough stage to shake the universe.
You could make that, take that question in the form of, should I have fear of coffee, maybe? I mean, it may, at a certain point, be something very mundane that would overwhelm the universe. Mm-hmm. Because it would be a real question and not or Turing's thing. Mm-hmm. You know, it would confront the person and the person would respond instead of the person.
Mm-hmm. Sort of like an absurd act too. That, you know, I'm not throwing pies, but running. If you haven't run for a while, you know, the whole world turns over. You can be hung up in a neurotic sort of fear of doing anything and depression and everything, and running can turn your whole universe over. And if you remember the Vespers on that, Jane, the running. You know, from a lot of gospel. From running, doing something. Do it, damn it. I can't. Do it. I can't pick my feet up. Do it. Run. I can't. Come on. Bing. Whole new universe.
Hey, but there's a good point too, because somebody else has to be there. And I think
someone else, yeah.
It's the real problem for him in that. The closest he came to somebody else maybe is those girls singing from the mermaids or whatever they are.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And they're not even human.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the after there's another human voice unless you can put a lot on the you.
Mm-hmm.
If there is anybody who can, that he sees can understand what this is and stuff.
There's no nourishment. I mean, persons around to help you.
If they're
doing
it. He did to them what they did, somebody mentioned that he cut off the wall and the way he was doing, there may have to be people there. He can't see them. He sees the hair on their arms or something. He sees their shoe sleeves and things. But he seems to be looking at him in a certain way.
Yes.
Yeah. It's isolating.
He's just also in this drawing room with these people and everything. The realest things are what? Cups of marmalade, tea, toast, sunsets, dooryards, sprinkled streets. I mean, the people haven't had that kind of a reality for him at all.
They're the crack. China. China's whole. People come in pieces.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, I am not Prince Hamlet, nor was meant to be. And then you get on to that, to be or not to be. Prince Hamlet parallels Hamlet's world, Renaissance world, violent, evil, thriving, you know, creative, Prufrock's world, late Victorian, prudish twilight, comfortable, relaxed. Hamlet's indecision was a struggle, passionate struggle. Prufrock's indecision, tepid, easy to be digressed by perfume. Hamlet's resolution of conflict, violent end, and the death of himself. Prufrock's resolution, a moment of self-irony, then I won't say. But we'll see, talk about that. No, I'm not Prince Hamlet, nor was meant to be. I am an attendant lord, one that will do the swell of progress. I have a scene or two, advise the prince, no doubt an easy tool, deferential, glad to be of use. Politic, cautious, and meticulous, full of high sentence, but a bit obtuse, at times indeed almost ridiculous, almost at times a fool. Is that one of these real passages too? Or is that just more rationalization?
Sounds like he starts out by making by being very noble and striking himself down and saying, no, I'm not Hamlet. And then he goes on, and it sounds like he knocks himself down, and while he's thinking about it, he climbs back up again.
Well,
I have an attendant lord to advise the prince about an easy tool. And then he starts naming off his high points, and he's climbing again. And then it seems like at the end, when he's saying this almost ridiculous, at times almost the fool, to me, it doesn't seem to go with the poem, so I guess it's wrong. But to me, it seems like he's saying that out of the corner of his mouth and thinking kind of slyly that he's not really, but he's just kind of leading us on. And that's the image I get.
Is it
full of
his
catalyzed,
right?
Yeah. Yeah. It relates, I thought, to like Christ's Sermon on the Mount, where he says, you know, the worst thing you call anybody is a fool.
You call no man a fool. Yeah.
So isn't the word almost there important? Almost.
Yeah.
There never was.
Almost at times.
Yeah. It's like the decisions and the revisions. You know? Yeah. I made a decision to be a fool, but then a minute later I decided not to, and I was saved because of that. So almost I was a fool, but I never was.
What about fools too? That since you can't let him fool in a lot of Shakespeare's plays, is maybe in all of them, speaks the truth too.
Advises the prince.
Yeah.
Falstaff. Mm-hmm. He's kind of a buffoon.
He's a buffoon. He's a different character. The fool was usually, you know, a professional fool for the king and jester. What's unusual about this in Hamlet? Who's the fool in Hamlet? You know this, don't you? Aren't you the Hamlet? Huh? No. Polonius, see, is Ophelia's father, who sounds like this, deferential, politic, cautious, material, full of high sentence, a bit obtuse, you know, like this. Indeed, almost ridiculous. But the fool, now with the capital F, is there a fool in Hamlet? So. Yes. What is his state? Is he breathing or dead? Last poor Yorick, I knew him well. The skull of Yorick is the Yorick is the fool and he's dead. Yeah. See? But there's no living fool in Hamlet. The fool is this skull. And he gives this one soliloquy to him. Right? Last poor Yorick, I knew him well, and then we did this. So forth. Almost the fool. I don't know. Does that have any? I just thought of that now. Hadn't thought of that before. But there are some characters in Hamlet that I get them all screwed up since the play screwed it. Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. You know, their characters being referred to in this description of him, the minor characters of Hamlet. Polonius, Ophelia's father, he's a real nut, so forth. Just move a scene or two, be one of these extras that kind of, you know, they're characters, but they don't really, they're not the point. I mean, I'm just a minor character. I'm no Hamlet. Just a minor character. I don't have to do anything, really. It's just me. I mean, gee, come on. I don't expect anything of me. I'll do this, advise the prince, and so forth. Well, now, this makes sense. This is neat. I just found this out today. This makes a great deal of sense. He goes down and he says, no, I'm just this other guy. And there's a great sense of humor about this. Himself here, self-irony, you know, going on through here. He's not making the big claim. But then it's really neat to see that in Guido, that the guy who speaks at Dante at the beginning is swells of progress, starts a scene or two, advises the prince, no, is an easy tool, is deferential, glad to be of use, politic, cautious, and meticulous, full of high sense, and a bit obtuse. And that's why he's in hell. That's why he was in hell. Now, great, the self-humor, that it takes, self-irony that it takes to be able to say this about yourself and know that you're, you know, seven parts full. And yet, if it's a shrug of the shoulders, then it might be reason enough to be in hell, to be in this hell. And that's a very hopeful passage to me. I've read that as a very hopeful passage to me. The sign, there's this, you know, sort of a flash of self-irony that isn't quite like this grown slightly bald kind of irony. I mean, it's different. It could be a very freeing kind of self-irony. But what's important is it by itself. I think it's neither. It's hopeful. How does Prufrock himself respond to that vision of himself, which is very different from, you know, any other real conception that we've had of him up to now?
He says at times.
His remedy is to try to hold off the eternal footman. It's the reality of growing old, and then he thinks of all sorts of things that will remedy, or he won't be criticized by the people in the room unless they see through his funny guise when he rolls his pants and parts his hair differently. He can put off their criticism. I don't know where that's going.
What does he end up? Wokey, what happens between the fool line and I grow old? I shall wear the bottoms of my trousers rolled. He's talking about this moment, crisis, the crisis, and now he's way off. Okay, what's the word?
I don't know. It's something from the waste planet. It hits me right there. We who were once alive are now dying with a little patience.
We were once alive are now dying with a little patience. What's the name for that? Is it, you know, as a tone, you know? As an attitude toward your own predicament. Huh? Resign. Resignation. Resignation. A funny kind of stoic, though.
Well, I think you almost talk, you know, it. I guess I read that whole thing a little bit differently, like he comes across that fool business by talking too fast. And all, you know, it's the logic of his argument that ultimately convinces him that, man, you know, like, well, an attendant lord, will do to slow progress, star senior to advise the prince, no doubt, an easy tool. I mean, he's flip, differential, glad to be of use, politic, cautious, meticulous, full of high sentence, but a bit obtuse, at times, indeed, almost
ridiculous,
almost at times fool.
Yeah. And I think we have to think of the fool in the Hamlet.
Yeah.
Dead.
Yeah, he looked at himself.
Already
saw
dead.
His skull.
Yeah. And then immediately I grow old.
Yeah. The last poor me.
Yeah. And this is the footman again, he's heard it, and now it's not behind him anymore. He's close enough to it to where it's not chasing him, and he's looking at it, you know. And in a sense, maybe he, even though he's no Hamlet, he's looking at that and saying, alas, poor Prufrock, I knew him well. But I grow old, I shall wear the bottoms of my trousers rope. The latest fashion is going to try to look young. Shall I part my hair behind? I'm growing bald. Shall I part my hair behind, comb my hair forward so that I don't look so bald, so I don't look so old? Now what has happened to the do I dare force a moment to its crisis? Do I dare to eat a peach? What does fruit do to an old man's stomach? What do, the peaches are soft, but if it was an apple, his dentures would fall out. But, you know, do I dare to eat a peach? You know, what's happened to do I dare? Always before, do I dare disturb the universe? And we never knew what it was and so forth. And then you get this to be or not to be, I mean, or nor meant to be. And then you've got now here this, do I dare to eat a peach? I shall wear the white flannel trousers and walk upon the beach. I've heard the mermaid singing each to each in the sense that I'm going to walk on the beach, go to the spas, you know, this the scene in the icky scene in the Death in Venice with the I forget his name now. Supposed to be Mahler music, but what's the guy's name? Aschenbach. You know Death in Venice? The story Death in Venice? And in the movie of it, the guy is sort of this. It's icky because the guy's paints himself up and he kind of falls in love with his Tadzio, boy, and then he goes out on the beach and he's walking and he's trying to look young and he dyes his hair and rouges his cheeks, puts eye makeup on and everything to try to look younger, and he looks like a death, you know, sort of a grotesque thing, and then he's out on the beach in his white trousers and everything, and he's sitting in a chair and he sees this young boy, sea girl, I don't know, young boy, and out there swimming, and then he has a heart attack. And then you see him, you know, he's sweating, see, he doesn't leave, he's sweating on the beach, and he sees him, and then the camera goes to him, and the black dye is coming all over his face. Oh, have you seen the movie?
No.
I didn't like it as a representation of the story, you know. It just doesn't do it, but that scene is so icky, you know. But then you get this, I shall wear white flannel trousers and walk upon the beach at this resort kind of area, playground. I've heard the mermaids singing each to each, and I think at that time, it's sort of like, it's dramatic irony that it means more than the girls on the beach, I think. I think at that point, Prufrock is, heard the mermaids singing each to each. And then, I do not think they will sing to me. I think at first they're
yes.
Girls on the beach, and then they're not anymore.
Is that sort of seeing
things in that senility? No, I think at first, and I'm just guessing because I don't feel this is a real guess, because I can't see any evidence, you know, because he says mermaids, but I think I shall wear white flannel trousers and walk upon the beach. I've heard mermaids singing each to each. I do not think they will sing to me, and then there's a sort of a second wave, just whoop, hits. It's not just the literal, you know, I mean, it's not just girls. This is the way we've been using, I've heard the mermaids singing each to each. I've heard the muses, I have heard vision people singing, and they won't sing to me. I mean, I'm in the middle again. I can't hear them.
That's women coming and going again. Not talking to him.
Each to each, I've seen the riding sea, or the other dam is the mermaid.
You've got the each to each going for that. you know, the singing each to each, and then as the talking of Michael, you know, women come and go talking Michelangelo to each other. Doesn't feel
this,
right, though.
But what is this women? I mean, you know, it's exclusive. It doesn't say there are these folks. It's, you know, does it mean in that room he's the only guy?
That's who he's thinking of.
Yeah. In the beach?
Could that be women as an image sense? Like, he did include both sexes, but women as a other concept of the weaker sex, or the color very feminine, the frills and ruffles,
I don't think it's a statement of men and women out there, but I think that his world is this world that is, you know, the drawing room reality is proof rock in a world of women, I think.
He sees the men in shirt sleeves. That's on the outside.
Yeah, yeah, that's the outside. So, but I don't think he's seeing men in the drawing room as women. I wouldn't say that. I mean, as emasculated people, but
as in women's roles, like the women's role in society is to have tea parties and stuff. Perhaps the man's role is like to hang out the windows. Or maybe that goes back to all the works and days of hands lifting forgotten questions. The man's role.
The white flannel trousers walking on the beach is coming up. I'm going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
I have heard the mermaid singing each to each. That's back in the room, isn't it? Where he's coming from.
Yeah, it's past. I've heard the mermaids singing each to each, but I do not think that they will sing to me. They haven't in the past, and they won't in the future. But it's a hard one if it's them, because he has had to respond the way he does and to flinch so much. He has responded. Once, if you hadn't responded, you wouldn't flinch so much. At one time, there was some kind of a vision, you know. I mean, and the women talking Michelangelo aren't enough of a vision, you know. That there is this, that you're hearing music from a farther room, and it drowns out the reality. It just this music from a farther room is more this mermaid singing each to each. That drowns out the reality, the voices in this room that I'm in, the music from the farther room, and yet they're not. I don't can't make out the song, and they aren't going to sing to me. I think that those things parallel, but I think that the women coming and go talking of Michelangelo is one thing that. You know, the women figures do, and here's another thing,
yeah.
Women figures
yeah.
do,
okay.
Like
not
that.
Same with, yeah.
Now it's not
yeah.
a same
okay,
kind of
yeah.
thing. He's not calling those women, and what they were doing, singing each to each, and he's not. I don't think calling them mermaids. He's a fantasy.
In fact, that may even be before that. Before
yeah, it would have had to have been before to
yeah.
make him flinch so much.
Mm-hmm.
This is something I want to talk. Right, you don't flinch so much. You're not so scared unless, and everybody being a kid probably has done it way back when. You know, it's sort of like the parents thing in the Ben Shawn's illustrations, where the parents come to bring you joy, but you had to hurt parents. They came to give you joy, but it was someone else's joy. Well, like, kids do that too. You know, you go to your parents, and you know, swat. It was someone else's joy. But you did respond with it, you know, that there was more to life and there was meaning in life and there was beauty in life and so forth. And now you have come up with, Dover Beach, this world so various and so beautiful and so new was really just this dream, you know. the world only has no joy, no light, no certitude, no peace, no hope for hope, no help for pain, you know. And that reality is where sort of you're at. And then they won't sing to me. I've seen them riding seaward on the waves, combing the white hair of the waves blown black. And it's this very lively, very lively thing all of a sudden. It's not this lingering fog and everything. Yeah.
These mermaids, do they also have some sirens?
Yeah, now that's kind of neat, you know. Yeah, I think so, because the sirens were tempting these guys toward shipwreck, and they're not even singing to prove from.
They hear some, but they just don't catch them.
Yeah. There's no shipwreck there. I'd be interesting to think about that some more. I don't know. It's something to chase down.
The I have lines are really interesting, along with the and lines. I have things that I have seen the moment of my greatness flicker. I have heard the mermaids singing. I have seen them riding.
Mm-hmm.
I have known the arms already, known them all. Really. It was a good old day.
Yeah, yeah. I think he had something that he measures the drawing room reality with. I mean, he had to have something.
Yeah.
And yet I think almost that he's forgotten. To where now when he remembers, it's mermaids.
Yeah.
It's mermaids, it's combing the... Oh, he has seen them now. And now they really were mermaids. They're fantasy, I think, fantasy creatures. And I think mermaids is a great image. It's sort of like the sentimental and the ironic, you know? A mermaid is an interesting creature in terms of being sort of like this proof rock comes in with the, you know, the sentiment, the romantic, and then the turnaround, you know. And here he's hearing these mermaids who are women above the waist and fish below the waist, you know. Huh? What? There's no, you know, you talk about frustration. Sexual frustration. You know,
can't get 30,000 years.
You know what? You know, you're got this half. You know, this, which half? You know, the old jokes, the old locker room jokes about which half. right down the middle. Huh? Okay. Left. Yeah, which half? The left. No, but I guess it'd be a great image of the poem is to have a mermaid and a merman and have them mixed up. But, you know, you have the hopelessness, too. And you do have. There's a way of talking. There's a way of talking about this poem. There's a way of talking about this poem, which is, you know, and then the footnote mentions this sort of sexual neurosis and inadequacy and so forth. And then you do get this crazy, there's a craziness about this mermaid business, the fantasy, which to almost show the emptiness built into this fantasy that he does have, you know, this sort of escape, you know, he has this fantasy world. To protect him from both the realities of the lonely men in shirt sleeves and the drawing room, and he just kind of goes off into that, resigned that no one will sing to him, but he has this other reality which is more real to him and more lively, and yet with no more possibility for fulfillment. You know, I guess the mermaids act as an omen as well as a nice thing. An omen. And now he goes down when the winds blow the waters white and black. And there's a, you know, the wind is, I ask the question, if the wind is spirit and the water is life, And then if the spirit blows life black and white, if my spirit, not Holy Spirit, my spirit blows, you know, gets working and blows my life black and white, then I eject. I eject. And then...
Then, say that again. Then I eject?
Eject out of this into fantasy. Into a make-believe. Into a fantasy world. And then he says, we have lingered in the chambers of the sea.
Jeff,
yeah.
I don't understand.
Okay, if the wind is spirit, you know, pneuma, if the wind is spirit, and water, which is a symbol of life, and the wind, symbol of the spirit, water, symbol of life, black and white, no colors again, black and white, harsh reality, Oz is in color, but Kansas is black and white, but when the spirit gets turbulent and blows my life to be this sort of black and white, harsh reality, then I go out, you know, and I go into the sea. We have lingered in the chambers of the sea. Chamber music is drawing room music. Chamber music, drawing room. We have lingered in the chambers of the sea. Now he's lingered in a drawing room. Eli, remember that passage about the afternoon and the lingering and everything? He's lingered in the drawing room. And then he goes out of that, and we have lingered in the chambers of the sea. By sea girls wreathed with seaweed, red and brown. By sea girls wreathed with seaweed, red and brown. And we have been there. And till human voices wake us and we drown. Until human voices get us up out of the water and we into the air and we drown in the air. It is real, the final inversion. You know. The final inversion. He can only, his only life is in dream. And the most lively life he has is in dream.
Yeah, that chamber image, we have lingered, I have been sleeping, but now my dream takes me here.
Well, if I'm awake, I'm dead.
Yeah, yeah.
And if I'm asleep, I'm alive.
Yeah, and I've been lingering. In
Shakespearean literature, the chamber is retired to my chambers. It's like bedroom.
Mm-hmm. But what in the world is that, Jeff? Oh, the chambers of the sea. I think like in terms of chamber music. Drawing room, my drawing room and chamber, I think drawing room and a chamber music, what's referred to in chamber music is the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
You have chamber music played in drawing rooms. And what's been happening? Chambers of the sea music being played in drawing rooms? Where was he all this time? You know. Hmm? Well, he's been in the, I think he's in the drawing room still.
Yeah.
He's in the drawing room still.
Sort of,
yeah, go ahead. You were talking.
But is he asleep in the drawing room? And his dream, he's asleep, but then he goes into his dream, and then when he wakes up, he falls down.
Yeah, he's not like literally
chamber,
sleeping.
Chambers of his. I've lingered in the chambers. I've been lingering in the
chambers. But we think, see, where we think at this time, okay, where is the guy? He's back in the drawing room.
Yeah.
He's never left, and he hasn't opened his mouth yet.
Mm-hmm.
He's been wondering, should he force a moment to his crisis, and somehow he gets back to, he goes through this whole thing, and then he ends up, we have lingered in the chambers of the sea by sea girls wreathed in seaweed red and brown, that this is what he's been doing while sitting in the drawing room. He's been in a different kind of chamber.
Mm-hmm.
And he was living there more than he's living outside in the world of the act kind of action that he's been doing, which is a sort of a dead stuff. But he's living more there in his dream world than he is in the reality. And there he can breathe, and there there's the irony is that in the dream there's more nourishment than in the reality. And then till human voices wake us and we drown. And he gets back into the reality and suffocates. It suffocates him. Now, human voices wake us. What human voices?